Paul, the Apostle by Grace, by Brother John Mitchell. Chapter 32. Ananias foiled again. The clatter of hooves upon the cobbles, the steady crunching sound of metalled sandals on hard surfaces, the clink of arms against armour, coupled with shouts of command, must have caused the inhabitants of Jerusalem alarm when the cavalcade, with Paul in its midst, moved off to begin the first part of the overnight journey to Caesarea. An ambush, such as had been threatened by the Jews, could hardly have been organised at such short notice, but the commander was taking no chances. He had the advantage of both darkness and surprise, and in no time at all his forces would be clear of the environs of the city into the open country, where the Roman soldiers would show their famous pace as light infantry and cover the 35 miles to Antipatris by the following morning. Thereafter, the unmounted would take their rest before returning to Jerusalem, leaving the cavalry, after a change of mounts, to sweep on at a quicker pace and cover the remaining 25 miles to their garrison in Caesarea. On arrival, the centurion in charge of the detachment handed Paul over to Felix, the governor, along with a letter from Lysias. Having read it, Felix asked Paul what province he was from, and when told it was Cilicia, which was within Felix's jurisdiction, the governor set about making arrangements for Paul's case to be heard. Normally, that would have been within 3 days, but since Paul's accusers were over 70 miles away, and they had to be summoned to attend, it took Ananias and his picked band of members of the Sanhedrin 5 days to appear. Meantime, Paul was handed over to a soldier and was kept in one of the guard rooms attached to the old Herodian palace. Being a Roman court, the Jews, who were unfamiliar with Roman procedure and law, obtained the services of a local barrister named Tertullus to present their charges against Paul. Because he had a Roman name, some have thought that he might have presented the case in Latin. But that seems unlikely in view of the fact that all participants, Jewish and Roman, would have understood it if it were conducted in Greek. However it was, Tertullus soon showed himself to be a smooth-tongued operator. Speaking as though he were himself a Jew, he began by addressing Felix fulsomely, saying, "We have enjoyed a long period of peace under you, and your foresight has brought about reforms in this nation. Everywhere and in every way, most excellent Felix, we acknowledge this with profound gratitude. But in order not to weary you further, I would request that you be kind enough to hear us briefly." Tertullus then added to his other skills a penchant for exaggeration, saying, "We have found this man, Paul, to be a troublemaker, stirring up riots amongst the Jews all over the world. He is a ringleader of the Nazarene sect, and even tried to desecrate the temple, so we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to learn the truth about all these charges we're bringing against him." After which, representatives of the Jewish delegation joined in the accusations and asserted that what Tertullus had said was true. Motioning to Paul, Felix permitted him to reply. Whereupon, in more measured but also respectful terms, Paul said, "I know that for a number of years you have been judge over this nation, so I gladly make my defence. You can easily verify that no more than 12 days ago I went up to Jerusalem to worship. My accusers did not find me arguing with anyone at the temple, or stirring up a crowd in the synagogues, or anywhere else in the city, and they cannot prove to you the charges they are now making against me. However, I admit that I worship the God of our fathers as a follower of the way, which they call a sect. I believe everything that agrees with the law and that is written in the prophets, and I have the same hope in God as these men, that there will be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. So I strive always to keep my conscience clear before God and man. After an absence of several years, I came to Jerusalem to bring my people gifts for the poor and to present offerings. I was ceremoniously clean when they found me in the temple courts doing this, There was no crowd with me, nor was I involved in any disturbance. But there are some Jews from the province of Asia who ought to be here before you and bring charges if they have anything against me. All these who are here should state what crime they found in me when I stood before the Sanhedrin. Except it was this one thing, that I shouted as I stood in their presence, "It is concerning the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you today." What Felix had thought of the charges brought against Paul before he spoke, no one knows. But it is certain that Felix had never heard of his causing disturbance amongst the Jews throughout the Roman Empire, as Tertullus had alleged. As to his being a ringleader of a sect called the Nazarenes, after the birthplace of Jesus, which implies heresy against the law of Moses, Paul had rebutted the charge on two counts. First, that as a follower of the way, a term that Felix himself was acquainted with, he believed everything in the law and the prophets. And secondly, he shared the same hopes as members of another sect, namely the Pharisees, who were represented in that very court and not considered illegal. Concerning the charge that he had attempted to profane the temple, Paul's statement outlining his purpose in visiting Jerusalem for charitable purposes, his careful ceremonial cleansing and quiet behaviour while in the temple, without being involved on his part with any disturbance, were matters capable of verification, and about which the Jews had not produced a single witness. Indeed, the formulators of the disturbance that had erupted were some Ephesian Jews, who were now notable only for their absence from Felix's court. Even the disturbance that had taken place when Paul had appeared before the Sanhedrin had risen over one simple point of doctrine, namely the truth concerning the resurrection of the dead. Thus, with simple honesty, Paul had destroyed Ananias' case. But Felix, the professional politician, as well as procurator, knowing he would have to deal with the Jews another day, procrastinated. He adjourned the proceedings indefinitely, promising a decision after consultation with Lysias when he should come to town. That Lysias ever came and was consulted is not stated, nor whether Felix made a decision. But his action, or rather inaction, meant that Ananias and co. went back to Jerusalem, disappointed, but still determined to kill Paul should they ever get the opportunity. As for Paul, he was handed over to a centurion who was instructed to keep him under guard, which usually meant chaining the prisoner's right hand to a soldier's left, though whether this was done to the letter seems doubtful, in view of the procurator's further instruction that Paul should be allowed some measure of freedom and have his friends take care of his needs. In fact, Felix's attitude to Paul showed the same kind of ambivalence Herod Antipas at one time showed toward John the Baptist, a sense of awe coupled with fear. It first showed itself several days after Felix had suspended Paul's case, when the procurator came with his wife Drusilla, who was a Jewess, and sent for Paul, wanting to know more about the new faith, centred in Jesus as the Messiah. Lesser men than Paul would no doubt have adopted the softly approach, but not so Paul. When he discoursed on righteousness, self-control and the judgment to come, subjects uncomfortable for both members of his audience, Felix was afraid. He cut short the meeting saying, "That's enough for now, you may leave. When I find it convenient, I will send for you." And this he did frequently during the 2 years during which he kept Paul in his custody, hoping all the time that either Paul or his influential friends would come up with a bribe of the kind which notoriously he would be pleased to accept. These Christians, however, led by Paul, were representative of a new breed of men, who, while rendering to all their dues, tribute to tribute, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear and honour to whom honour, would never engage in bribery, whether given or received.